Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 17.
Mr. Ray, reel 17. You were telling me how you were foraging in Brussels, particularly in a hotel you'd found for food, and you'd warn the men off drinking.
Yeah, I did. Definitely. I told them to leave the fucking drink alone. We went there to drink without a fight and went for food. Yeah. Anyway, we went down several places, and I went to one smaller stamina. And managed to get a couple of loaves of bread and some salami, I think it was, and that's all we could find. We went across the other side of the road, and there must have been a convent there, and that was deserted too. There was no food in there. So you could find out how the people felt when they were getting some, being bombed by air and strafed by air, you know what I mean? They panicked straight away. This has all happened behind us when we went forward. And went in the convent, and there was nobody in, and went down in the cellar. But the crafty girls, they flooded their cellar. So you couldn't get anywhere, you know, right up to the steps. And that was where they kept the wine, I think, the sacramental wine, if you could call it that. Or a quiet booze, if they wanted one. Anyway, they came out and took what we had back, and I saw Harry Qualthrough, and I talked to him. And while I was talking,
Harry who?
Qualthrough.
Qualthrough.
Qualthrough, yeah.
And he was your
sergeant major. And I said, "Well, I've done the best I can, sir." And I said, "I've finished as far as I dare, and it's come back to the county." So, well, he said, "What you got there, Ray?" He says, "You might as well dish it out the best you can on your platoon." He said, "I think we're all in the same bloody boat." He said, "We'll have to wait for Russians from somewhere, I don't know." He said, "That our queue has gone out of sight, and he's been doing the best he can, I suppose. Carry on." And just before I turned around, we saw an oldish chap, his father up on the other side of the street, and he's walking back to us, you know, walking up the street. I said, "Ah, there's a lonely soul there, Sergeant Harry." He said, "Yes," he said, "I wonder what he's prowling about at, you know." And it was a very sad incident, because we shouted them to, we could hear, I suppose, to halt, and halt, halt or we'll fire, and you're still walking on. And of course we had to be very, very careful about the German V forces or whatever they had planting behind our lines, you see, and that sort of business. So Harry said, "Well, we'll have to stop them anyway." So he ordered a man to get down, and just this private soldier, I won't mention his name, went in the kneeling position and fired one shot, and the old fella just fell in his face. Well, he went over and had a look. And do you know what he had? He had a big round loaf of bread stuck up the front of his waistcoat. That's all he had. He could have stopped and talked, you know, but he didn't stop. But I thought we could have thought, well, he's one of the German spies that's being planted. And he copped it. That was a sheer coincidence. I felt very, very sad about that when I saw him.
Were there a lot of worries about fifth columnists, spies, sort of thing?
Yes.
How'd that, I mean, who'd spread them, if you see what I mean? What made you think of that? What's so worried about them?
Well, we did get a little bit of rumour that there were fifth columnists in the area and things like that. And to prove a point, later, Peter, at this bridge, what I had, they're all engineers.
This is the Albert Canal Bridge.
The Albert Canal Bridge. I'd always like to have gone back to that area myself. And anyway, apart from that, Pete, the Royal Engineers had left all their tackle to blow the bridge. The gun cotton, primers, fuses. Well, I knew quite a lot about explosives while working in the mines, you know. And I saw Lieutenant Peel, I said, Mr. Peel, I said, come and have a look at all this lot here, down this side. Just under where the bridge was, like, and it was all, like, partly covered. And while went on observation, I said, you know, I said, we could do a good job with this if we get permission of the company commander. I said, do you know anything about the explosives? Right? I said, of course I do. I said, it worked in a bloody pit. I said, no, I know what it's all about. He said, I think I'll go back and find out. So he come back and said, well, he said, we don't know whether there's any of our troops on the other side of that bridge to go across, Jim. So we'll have to wait. So a couple of hours later, we're still observing. I saw a German motorcyclist, he had it on a combination, and he come around right top of the, in plain view, he come around, he had somebody in the sidecar, a recce, and I reported that immediately to Mr. Peel. So I said, look, I said, there's a recce motorcycle and sidecar come around there, and I said, they've had a good gander around where we are, at right up the top end of the boulevard. So I said, if they can come round there, the motorcycle and the sidecar, I said, we can't have any troops, because they wouldn't have got that far. So I said, what about this bridge? He said, well, he said, I haven't had any orders to attempt to blow it. So I said, well, fair enough then. I said, it's an open, I said, where we are now, I said, the Germans have only got to send their bloody tanks down and get across. Then the chances are, well, that's the orders, we've got to leave it. And when we left that area, we had to withdraw again, and by the time, before we withdrew, somebody had set the bloody church on fire behind us. Behind us, where we had to go through, church is on fire, next to the road, a big church. Anyway, we got through the main part of the city, Bristol, marching again, away from another trail. We did pick up some Russians eventually on the other side of Bristol. And then we came into the open terrain away from the city, through the villages, and in particular, on the other side of these large villages, it was occupied. The people were there. And you know, they were outside watching us going down there, and they couldn't care a chuff. Looking at us as though, as if to say, what's the matter, are you running away, or something like that, you know, and they gave us the feeling that they were angry because we were going through. Shouting and that in their language, we couldn't understand what they were saying, we took no notice, so we just marched on.
What was your morale like?
All right. Well, it's pretty high. All right.
Because so far you've not had a lot of casualties in your company anyway, or platoon.
No, we weren't so bad at all. And it was quite a long march after leaving Brussels. And we did encounter refugees.
And what state were they in?
Oh, they were disarrayed. They were pushing hand carts, there were kids, one horse in a cart, loaded up with bits of belongings on, women carrying children, very few men, except elderly men, and youths about 14 or 15, you know, and they were quite an obstruction. We managed to get through them anyway.
Did they block the road much?
Well, they did, so we more or less had to go like in more single files around them, and that work our way around them, get round them.
Because you weren't made to get off the road while you were.
No, we went round them and through them the best way we could, you see. And we had still a lot of marching to do, Peter.
Were you getting any sleep at night? I mean,
very, very little. We just tossed down where we were, in the open. Up again, you know. Didn't have a shave. For days on end. Couldn't get a wash. No time for a wash, really.
How far behind you do you think the Germans were? Did you have any idea?
Well, no idea. No idea at all. There's plenty of air activity, but the more at night time, heavy bombers and that going on, I suppose, paying our little island visit, you see. We didn't get any information of what was going on at home. We didn't know how people were situated or what was really happening. And we felt rather dejected because we were on the march. We couldn't do our stuff really, you know what I mean, because we were really getting we weren't disorganized, we were sort of marching into nowhere really, going back all the time. And stopping for rests, a bit of kip, up again, marching, and bits of news. I think we came to another battalion, I don't know what it was, and we're nearing towards the Dunkirk area then. And one of his officers said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Durham's." He said, "Durham's." He says, "Thank Christ we got the Durham's through here anyway." And they were in front of us as we were marching through, you know. That was the only unit. I don't know what unit it was, really. We hadn't time to ask.
Were you in much touch at all with the rest of your brigade?
Yeah, we must have been.
I mean, did you see other troops much?
No. We came through one big township, I don't know what the name it was. And the soldiers there, the Belgians and French, they were all walking about with their guns slung, Couldn't care less. They must have travelled a hell of a lot faster than we travelled back. And I don't know whether I don't think they formed any defensive position. They just give, they were just saying, right, we've had it, you know, smoking, cigarettes, lounging around. We went on, and anyway, we formed a defensive line just outside of Dunkirk.
Right. What about Saint Vinet? Is that where?
Oh, that's right, Saint Vinet. Well, I had no maps. Mr. Peel had. He had the maps, and I said, Mr. Peel, I said, where the hell are we now? He said, this is a place called Saint Vinet. Oh.
And that was just outside Dunkirk. We haven't got a map.
It's about. Say 11 kilometres, 10 or 11 kilometres from Dunkirk. He said, we've got our defensive position now. He said, there's a railway. We came down, you know, and there's a railway cut the road, the longest railway. And the town Fennet was behind us. So, my platoon was situated forward across the railway line on one side of the road, a little bit of a farmhouse on the right side. There's another farmhouse on the left hand side, perhaps about 200 yards on the left hand side. We were digging in on the rail, but Mr. Peel moved my platoon up into occupy the farmhouse on the right. While we were digging in prior to that, Sergeant Walker, he must have been B Company, I had a stroll along, and there was two people. They had come out of the town and they'd come through our lines, you know, they'd walk through farther down, and they walked over the railway lines, and the women, but yet, Hookie Walker used to play football for the battalion, and I said, hey, up, he said, look at these two. I said, aye, I said, I can see them, Hookie. I said, they're not bloody women. He says, I was just thinking that. I said, look how they're walking. And they're striding towards, the Germans had occupied large copse in our area, where we occupied. They were that close then, Peter. That's how close they were. Not half a mile or a mile away in this copse. I said, look, I said, see that? They're marching. They're going straight across it like cops. I said, we didn't know whether to shoot them or not, you know. We were being dressed in women's clothes, and it was a bit rough going, I know what I mean. They might have to stride out a little bit extra. Anyway, that incident closed.
So you didn't shoot at them?
No. I think we might have, if we'd shot them, we'd have found that they'd and examined them, they'd have been men. Anyway, went back to my platoon, and we were hungry, and talking to Mr. Peel, and there's a farmyard. Oh, he said, tell what, he said, come on, sit with me, son. I went up to the farmyard on the left. There were a couple of pigs there, but they're dead. They're all bloated up. There's a lot of fowls in this enclosure. Chickens, like you know. He said, well, he said, we might have something to eat here. So we put his pistol out. Bang, bang, bang. The fellas was flying. We got a couple of little scrawny chickens. Well, you can imagine a pistol bullet hitting the chicken. Just like flesh, feathers and bones, you know. Here we are. Take them along and do what you can with them. And took them along and got the lads away. They're all like in position and that, and went in the trench and skinned these chickens and got up the cord and put them in a couple of mess tins and made a little fire. Cooked them. No salt, nothing like that. So I'd went round and I'd, right, get a piece of this, piece of that, come on, some of that. Do you want some gravy? Just like hot water, you know what I mean? With a bit fat floating on the top. And I got the chicken breast, like the wishbone in. Now, this is a little story, this one, and it's hung around with me as long as I live. I've got the wishbone, and Lance Corporal Nelson, he had a bit chicken as well. So, he says, I've got a wishbone there, Sarge. Come on, let's pull it, shall we? So, pulled it. And I got the wish. He says, you lucky bugger. I said, well, oh, I said, I don't know. I said, I'm not particularly superstitious about Nelly. I have to call him for Nelly for short. And, the tragic part about it, when we did start fighting, now, we really got a good thumping. The Germans, you could see they had armour in that copse. We had no artillery support, Peter, nothing. No aircraft support. The only aircraft support I saw was coming back from from Hull, and it was an Army Corporation plane, a Lysander. And there was a couple of Messerschmitts, they swooped down and they started to play with it. Lysander hadn't a chance. Oh, they gunned him down straight away. That was the ironic part about it. Mr. Peel, during the daytime, used to go up on the left-hand side to where Sergeant Fisher's platoon was up there, and used to do sniping. You get in the loft, take some tiles out, and snipe. And when you, it was rather peculiar. He came back to me and he said, well, I'll go up and look after this platoon, Sergeant. And he says, and you look after this one here. And it was early, very early hours in the morning. It was all mist, grey mist.
Now, is this the 26th and 27th of May?
Yeah.
Is it that was the 26th, the first attempt?
27th. And it was very early on in the morning, and the battle really started. We up and around, you know, I could hear this crunch, crunch, crunch. farther up. And I hesitated, and I thought Mr. Peel, he might have had a reconnaissance party with him, you know, because he'd shoot out in the blue. We wouldn't tell you where the hell he was going, but he'd come back. So in the meantime, Peter, they brought an anti-tank gun up to cover that junction of the railway and the road coming all across it.
Do you mean a boy's anti-tank gun?
No, it was an anti-tank.
A proper one.
Right. And this had been brought up during the night, you see, in the early hours of the morning, and I heard this crunch, 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 and I scooted out and had a look. I'm rather surprised, because the platoon on the left was forward, and me, and I was parked at the rear and on the right, and I had a look. And the Germans were sending us half a company, soldiers down this road marching down. That was a crunch. I said, right, quick, come on, quick, get the guns out there. I said, some bloody Germans coming down this road. And we got into firing positions, like, we started firing. Kneeling, lying, standing, brain guns blazing away up this bloody road. And they penetrated right to where this farm was on the left hand side. So myself and Private Blanche, we went up and had a look, and there was a Hauptmann. Well, he's a lieutenant who was being killed. So the first thing I did, I took his maps, turned them over and had a look at them, like, and took his maps, took his binoculars, put them home in there. And Hurst, Private Hurst, he was a runner. I said, here, get these maps. I said, and nip off as quick as you can, the company commander, and give them these maps and get them to BHQ, because they'd be very valuable to us, you see, because I didn't open the maps because I knew they were very valuable documents, you see. We could tell exactly what the Germans had done on the other side, particularly this Hauptmann, who was an infantryman. And in that engagement, we must have they must have put some mortar fire down onto that area where Lieutenant Peel was. He didn't get back to me, you see. Actually, Mr. Peel was killed there. His platoon sergeant was badly wounded. I sent a SIT report back to my company commander, Mr. Cousins. And he came up to me. I sent him back with Hurst. He came back to me, he said, Ray, he says, I made a little report out on the field service notebook, you know, so I can mark it according to squares, and given them situation of dead, etc. And that. He said, don't you think it looks a little bit scary, you know what I mean? I said, no, sir. I said, my situation report. It's a lot scary to me, because I put on the bottom, I said it was in a heavy engagement, which it was. I said it's best prepare to get the reserve platoon up. Be prepared to move the reserve platoon. They said, oh, well, they said, you carry on. They said, don't you bother about the reserve platoon. He says, I'll determine that one. I said, well, very good, sir. I said, that. There's another attack came.